Please stand clear of the doors. Por favor, manténganse alejado de las puertas.
Hey everybody, welcome to Unlocking the Magic. We have a great show for you today. We have a special guest with us. He is a fellow Disney podcaster and an author of a few great books, The Thinking Fan's Guide to Walt Disney World Magic Kingdom, and including one of the most recent books that he just wrote, Hocus Pocus and Focus. I just finished reading that. And rumor has it there's another one coming out. We have with us today Aaron Wallace.
I love having fellow Disney podcasters on the show. I like talking Disney with these guys. Somebody mentioned on our live show that we do on Monday nights about having other podcasts on. And at first I was like, you know what, why would we have other Disney podcasts on? But it's great to get their perspective of what's going on in Disney World. And not everybody sees the Disney community or parks the same way that we do, which is, it's interesting to get other people's perspective.
I'm just happy to make new friends. I'm building my friend list.
Which we did on this show.
I think so. I hope so. I hope I'm not overstretching it by saying that Aaron's my new friend.
You probably are.
I may have said best friend, but anyway.
He definitely has your style.
Definitely.
All right, let's just get into this episode with Aaron Wallace. All right, everybody, thank you for joining us. We have on with us a special guest for today's episode. He's written a few books, Thinking Fan's Guide to Disney, Hocus Pocus in Focus, in another upcoming book, A Thinking Fan's Guide to Epcot. He also hosts a popular podcast, Zippity Doo Pod. We have on with us Aaron Wallace. Aaron, thanks. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you both for so much for having me, and thanks to all of your listeners as well.
So tell us about yourself. How did you get into this whole Disney podcasting world? I know you have one of the longest running Disney podcasts out there, and you've been doing it for quite a long time. What sparked your interest when it comes to Disney and then into the podcasting world?
Yeah, gosh, time flies, but it really has been a long time now. I was sort of born and raised on Disney, going back to a very, very young age. My parents, or my mom in particular, is a big Disney fan, especially the stuff from like the 60s and 70s when she was a kid. And so I was really raised on a lot of that. And I think I just sort of picked up and ran with it, both the parks and the movies, from an early age. And I just had a lot to say about it, and so I joined a message board back in 2003. Remember message boards? I don't really think they're a thing.
Oh, my goodness.
And it was at ultimatedisney.com, which is one of the largest Disney movie-based websites out there. And as it happens, the webmaster was looking for someone to assist with movie reviews and DVD reviews and that sort of thing. And I guess he picked up on some of the things I'd been writing on the message board and asked if I would like to do that. I said, sure. Long story short, I ended up doing a lot of writing for them. And then this guy came along, Jesse Opsbaum, with a show called The Mouse Pod. It was the first ever Disney podcast. And in fact, it was one of the only podcasts, period, back then. This was like 2004, 2005. And he asked me if I wanted to come on and talk about what I did for the site there, Ultimate Disney. I said, sure. And that led to sort of a recurring gig on his show. And when that show went away, he said, you know, hey, you should start your own podcast. And I said, well, okay, why not? I still barely really knew what a podcast was. And I mean, they weren't even on iTunes or anything. And the early shows were very poor quality. And it was like a very burgeoning little baby of a format back then. And so I started it. And then, you know, that led to the books and everything else. And here I am, some, I guess, 11 years later, still doing the same thing.
That is crazy, because I know how much work it takes to do a podcast in 2016. I can't imagine how much work it was in 2005.
Well, podcasts sound a lot better now, or at least relative to what mine sounded like back then, because let me tell you, they were rough.
We always say to people, too, when they find our show, you get better at it as you go. You get more comfortable behind the microphone, and you know, you find your purpose and what you're talking about. And we always tell people that find us recently, hey, listen, don't go back and listen to the first 10 or 15.
Right? Yes, absolutely. I've always torn on whether to even leave those episodes up. Enough listeners tell me that they like going back and hearing my awkward 19-year-old self mumble from 11 years ago that I leave them up. But I'm like, new listeners, please.
Yeah, we're the same way.
That's hilarious.
I always cringe when you look at the stats once in a while and you see like 25 listens on your first episode. You're like, oh.
Yeah.
Poor people.
So I know. So back to you. So you started, so you said your mom had a passion for Disney. So did you go to Disney a lot as a kid?
Yeah, I mean, I think we took probably about an annual trip or thereabouts to Walt Disney World as a child. But back home, I mean, it was Disney movies and Disney TV shows and Disney music sort of all the time.
Yeah.
And for me, there was never really this divide that I know some other people have between like the Disney movies and the Disney parks. I mean, to me, it was just the Disney universe, and I was totally into all of it. And the movies were an extension of the parks and vice versa for me. But yeah, I mean, it was really sort of from day one.
And you've written three. Oh, sorry.
No, I was just saying, because, you know, some people like us, for instance, like we always liked Walt Disney World, Disney movies, but it wasn't until, you know, a few years ago, I say, that we really found ourselves in love with the Disney universe. And so I always try to hear any stories like you have, maybe if you have some sort of like memory that strikes your mind. But it sounds like you guys just dove right into it from day one.
Well, I just remember being just totally enraptured, just in awe of those movies. And then I remember our first trip to Walt Disney World, even though I was fairly young. And I mean, these things, I was so invested in these stories, you know, it came to life around me. And I think just that experience never sort of stops haunting me. And at the same time, it just, in terms of like a particular memory, I do remember there was like a piece of gum that dropped on the ground or something like that in Magic Kingdom, and a cast member immediately came and swept it up. And, you know, my parents sort of talked to me about then and there, like, you know, how important that was for just like showmanship, and that's part of what makes this place special. And for some reason, I mean, not that I have any particular interest in like custodial work, but just something about that just stuck with me. And I think I married in that moment the specialness of the movies to the specialness of like theme park showmanship. And that was kind of maybe the spark of it.
Cool.
In writing too, you're on your third book now. Was writing something that you've always loved?
Oh, yeah. I think from the time I was very little, I always loved writing. And it's something, you know, people would tell me when I was little that I you know, you're good at writing, you're a good writer. And, you know, looking back at things now, I don't know if that was the case. But there's something about, I think, when you're very little and you're coming up, the thing that you love and then the thing that other people tell you that you're good at, you just sort of naturally develop an interest in. And so I came up in the writing world, and I did, you know, creative writing in college. And I knew that, you know, I had this sort of seed of an idea for a book about the Disney parks in the back of my head. And actually, while I was in law school, a book that I had that was just a guide to surviving law school, I had a chapter about pursuing other interests before you get out into working into a law firm and all that. And it said, you know, you should write a manuscript if you ever wanted to. You should do it during your third year of law school. That's really your best opportunity. So I took that advice to heart, and I did that. And of course, I was already well out of law school by the time the book came out, but those early drafts were written then.
How long did it take you to write your first book from start to finish?
Oh gosh, it was a very long process. The first book, I think, always takes the longest, in part because you've never done it before, so it's a little bit more of a mountain to climb. And then, you know, getting a publisher, and actually my first choice publisher, the Intrepid Traveler, ended up coming on board for that project, thankfully. But even just giving them a chance to review the manuscript, to make a decision, to get back in touch with me, and then getting all the cylinders firing in terms of, you know, getting a distributor and going through the editing process. I mean, I think overall it was probably about a 3-year process from start to finish. And fortunately, the subsequent books have not taken that long.
Right. You get better at it as you go with everything. I know that for us, you know, to write a blog post takes me a while. And then at the end of that, I'm like, I don't want to do that ever again.
Yeah.
I can't imagine writing a whole book.
It's exhausting, but it sounds like you're really passionate about it, which I think makes it a lot easier.
Yeah. And that's, you know, really, that's what I do. I mean, all day long, I'm writing in some form. I mean, it's not always necessarily about Disney, but I mean, one of my favorite movies of all time is Sister Act 2, Back in the Habit. I don't know.
I love it.
Yeah, and you know, there's that moment when Whoopi's character says to Lauryn Hill's character, you know, if you wake up in the morning and all you can think about is singing, you're a singer. And, you know, I think that's true for just about anything in life. And that really, I mean, when I wake up in the mornings, I am just ready to get up and write.
So you really love, obviously you really love movies, because your newest book about Hocus Pocus, what was sort of your inspiration on that? And Hocus Pocus in Focus. I love it. I love everything about the book.
Well, thank you for saying that. I loved Hocus Pocus from the time it came out. I think like a lot of people, my generation, I'm 31, and really I think people from several generations now, that movie has just held a special place in my heart for a very long time. It made a very big impact on me at a young age. And as time has gone on, you know, the movie flopped upon release and it was trashed by critics and it was essentially forgotten. But as time has gone on, it's found this audience and has grown and grown and grown and become this pop culture phenomenon now 23 years later. And what I see is that a lot of people have had that same experience with the movie where it made this like really stark impact. And so I just really became interested in why. Like, what is it about this movie in particular that allowed it for instance, to develop an audience years after it failed miserably? What allowed it to be so edgy? Because one of the things I talk about in the book is is that it does have some, there are a lot of like mature themes and a lot of scary things going on in the movie. There's like some devil stuff going on, just things that you don't expect to find in a PG-rated Disney comedy. And so a lot of the book is just exploring these questions of like, why and how in the world did this happen? And how did Hocus Pocus get away with it?
I love reading about the casting and how there were some other sort of actors at the time that were being considered for roles. I always think about that because if I feel like if there were different actors, I think you said Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yeah.
I think it would change the movie. I don't know. I always wonder about that.
So are you guys fairly familiar with the movie?
Yes.
Oh yeah.
You know, we actually live in the movie is set in Salem, Massachusetts, and we actually live in the next town over.
That's right. Is that Marblehead?
Swampscott. Swampscott, which is the next town over from Marblehead. So Salem's the next town over. So we're quite familiar with the whole theming behind the movie and everything that goes on. I mean, Salem is a zoo around Halloween time.
I've heard. I'm really dying to get out there during the Halloween season. So have you guys seen like some of the filming locations from the movie that are still standing there?
Yes.
Oh, yes. Absolutely. Yep. Yep. Regret not checking it out when I was a teenager at the time when it came out. So
yeah, quick tip too, if you ever come to and you want to see the stuff that's in the movie or you know, Halloween happenings, Salem's a great time to go, maybe even in the summertime, because the things that are open during Halloween season are open all year round there.
It's less crowded. It's,
yeah, just 100,000 less people in July than in October.
Yeah, I imagine it's a little bit like Disney World crowd-wise.
Exactly.
From Halloween. Yeah.
Yep, exactly. But yeah, so we're here, and it's neat having, you know, the movie sort of set here, and then it's really neat to see part of where they actually filmed, and then reading your book, it just kind of put it together full circle. So it was really cool.
That's great. I'm glad to hear that.
So how much
can you imagine?
Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, I was just going to say, yeah, like Rosie O'Donnell in the role of Kathy Najimy's role as Mary Sanderson, or Leonardo DiCaprio as Omri Katz. I mean, yeah, I like to imagine what that movie would be like, but I can't imagine that it would be the same.
They should recreate it with all those new characters.
No, I don't think so.
You should get like Funny or Die or one of those you know, web video outlets. They should like get those people together and film and a miniature alternative version of it.
That would be hilarious. See what they would come up with today.
Well, I know this is kind of sort of going off, not off topic, but kind of going, expanding a little too far on the movie part. But I thought there was a rumor that there was supposed to be a Hocus Pocus 2. Is that true? Do you know of any of that?
Well, okay. So I actually just did a book signing in Burbank with Mick Garris, who wrote the movie, or was one of several writers on the movie and is also the executive producer. And he wrote the afterword for the book. So we were able to get together in Burbank, and I was just talking with him about this to get sort of the latest on it. And I mean, officially, you know, Disney's official word is that it is a no-go. Behind the scenes, there are talks. Those talks have focused on doing something at more of the television level, either for Freeform, which is formerly ABC Family, or Disney Channel, or something like that. But that having been said, getting Bette Midler, Kathy Najimy, Sarah Jessica Parker back on board, and they've all expressed a lot of interest in it, is probably they would want to see something at the theatrical level. So my thought is, even though officially as of now nothing is happening, there's just no chance that nothing comes out of this tremendous excitement that people have. And, you know, I sort of document in the book the history of these rumors about the sequel and the incredible reaction that happens every single time online. I mean, it's like all of entertainment media drops what it's doing and rushes to cover any hint at a Hocus Pocus sequel, whether it's official or not. And I think that there's no chance that Disney doesn't do something to capitalize on that momentum in the next few years.
I wonder why people are so still fascinated with that movie. Like you said, if there's any hint of a sequel coming out, the news feeds start to get a little crazy. Why is that, you think?
Yeah, I mean, you don't see that with very many movies at all. And usually when you do, it's something like Jurassic Park or Home Alone, you know, something that was like massively successful. And so it's very rare to have this obscure flop of a movie now command that much energy and excitement. And I think it has to do with a few things. One is just the camp nature of the movie. It's very campy and sort of weird. And I think anytime it's something weird but lovable, you develop like a fondness for it. You kind of like form a bond with the movie. And so I think that's going on. And then I think just because it is so unlike any other Disney movie, and yet so many people were exposed to it at a young age, something about the almost like shocking aspects of the movie just really make it stand out in your memory. And so anytime something comes along, it kind of sparks that nostalgic touchstone, you know? Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's funny that you said that because it's kind of shocking. And I'm thinking, here is what I'm thinking. My parents wouldn't let me watch it. And then all of a sudden the momentum built up because what's this movie all about? Why won't they let me see it? It's not really that racy, but there are parts of it that I kind of cringe. Like my now 9-year-old, she still hasn't seen it because there are parts where I'm not comfortable with. So maybe that also builds up like they can't, what's this movie about? They're the curiosity.
Right.
So finally, when they're teenagers, they can see it and it's kind of builds it back up again. I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely.
So your new book that's coming out, Thinking Fan's Guide to Walt Disney World, Epcot. Can you tell us a little bit about what that's going to be like?
Yeah, so my very first book was all about Magic Kingdom. And essentially the idea was to look at each and every ride, show, attraction in the park and to present not only the history and hopefully some new history that hadn't been documented before, but more than that, to give readers a new perspective. So to look at these as not just mere amusements, not just rides. You know, you get in a vehicle, you ride through a couple scenes, and you get out. But really as works of art, because there's no reason that we can't think about a theme park attraction as a storytelling medium in the same way that we think about a book or a play or a movie or what have you. And so I wanted to take that same sort of deeper appreciation approach to theme park rides. And so that's really what this book series is about, is, you know, having fun. It's lighthearted, but sort of giving the Imagineers their due as artists and as storytellers, not just as people who build things that feel fun to ride.
Right.
And so Epcot, the Epcot book is taking that same concept, that same approach, but bringing it to the theme park that really is the Thinking Fans theme park, right? I think Epcot's always kind of had that like status, you know, that it's
of course,
yeah, it's the park where you go to think and learn and become cultured and become inspired. And I mean, it quite literally, the park stated its original like mission was to change the world, which is a pretty lofty thing. And so the book is, again, it's looking at each attraction one by one in the park individually, but at the same time using those attractions to answer these bigger questions in Epcot, like, has the park changed the world? And some, you know, fan-made controversies like, when and where do characters belong in Epcot, if ever? And, you know, is it appropriate for characters from Frozen to be in World Showcase? And should celebrities be hosting attractions, or are they a distraction from the broader mission, the more nobler purpose of Epcot? So it's sort of, I guess, the Thinking Fans Guide for the Thinking Fans Park.
Excellent. Wow. Sounds like an interesting book.
I know. I'm sold right away. You got to tell us when that will be out, because I'm your fan.
Yeah, we do. I love that theming too, because I like the reason we do our podcast is to not so much do the Thinking Fans Guide, but we want to go into the history of the rides and the parks and make you feel like when you go to Disney, it's not about going from attraction to attraction to attraction. It is about, you know, the history of the parks, why the rides are there, like you said, who made them and why they made them, not just let's get on as many attractions as we possibly can in the shortest period of time.
Absolutely. And, you know, we have throughout the world, we have things that are monuments or landmarks, right? Like physical landmarks like the Statue of Liberty or, you know, the White House or whatever it might be. But, and I think in a lot of ways, these some of these theme park attractions, whether it's a Spaceship Earth or even something like It's a Small World, I mean, these have become cultural or pop cultural landmarks. And we can think about them in that same way. And I think that ultimately you fall in love with the place so much more once you kind of look at it that way. And it's the same thing with Hocus Pocus or with movies in general. You know, we talk about, like, with Main Street, for example, you look at the windows and you once you learn that the names on the windows mean something, well, all of a sudden you can't see Main Street without thinking about that. And the more you know, the more you fall in love with it. And movies are the same way. The more you learn about what these little things in the background of a shot might mean, the more you fall in love with the movie. And I think the same thing is true of Epcot. And so that's what's cool about podcast books and all these things that we're doing in the Disney fan community is that, you know, we as fans are sort of like teaching each other and bringing like our own unique perspectives to the table. And I know I have grown through 11 years of listening to other, you know, smart, enlightened, astute, observant Disney fans just point out things that seemed interesting to them. And so I think that's what's really cool about this community that has grown up and is really pretty enormous now.
Yeah, it is enormous. It's incredible.
I like this guy.
That's
I like
it.
You too.
We can stop the show now. Bruce likes you.
Yeah.
That's all he has.
My
to
mission
say.
Is complete.
Yeah, exactly. So we just finished interviewing Rolly Crump, and part of the takeaway with that was him and Marie was on the call as well, and we were just talking about bringing some of that into people's lives, because like you said, you know, it's different. Once you see the names on Main Street, it sort of connects you in a different way, and it's truly, that's to us anyway, that's where it really becomes magical, you know.
Absolutely.
So it's really cool. Have you love movies, so have you ever been in a movie?
No, I haven't. You know, I through my work with UltimateDisney.com and then eventually their spinoff site, DVDizzy.com, I've gotten to be around the sort of movie industry for a long time. I've gotten to go to like premieres, and I've gotten to interview a lot of celebrities. And so I've gotten to see the world from from like a certain perspective.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I've never actually been in a movie. I don't think anyone wants me in a movie.
Well, Connie's a secret actress. She wants to be in the movies and wants to be in a Disney movie. So that's her life goal.
That's my life goal. I was sort of in a Disney film. You could say I was in a Hallmark movie.
Oh, wow. What was it?
It was The Makeover. It was just like a family movie on ABC Family. It was really cute. But if you blinked,
so
you probably missed me. But, you know, it was my big debut in Disney film.
That's amazing. I'm going to watch it. I haven't seen
you.
It, but I will watch that.
Okay, great.
Good. I had to watch it, too.
Yeah, right. It was a cute movie. It was cute.
I want to get into your podcast. I like listening to your podcast. I think you do a phenomenal job with it. And anybody can find it on iTunes or Stitcher Radio too, I'm sure. And you should definitely download it and listen to it and subscribe to Aaron's podcast. But two podcasts that I love of yours are one where you talked about, and this is an older one, where you talked about what it's like to move to Orlando as a fan. So maybe we can get into that a little bit. Yes. And then the second one was you took a trip to California and kind of wanted to walk in Walt's footsteps and the things that he saw, the carousel, the bench. I want to talk about that a little bit too, if you have time.
Yeah, sure. You know, that trip was inspired actually by another Disney podcast. Like I was saying earlier, we all kind of inspire each other. And the Disneyland Gazette is this fantastic podcast that I've been lucky enough to be on a number of times. And they cover news and like feature stories out of Disneyland specifically. And a few of the co-hosts had taken this trip that they designed themselves. They called it a Walt's Pilgrimage. And they went through Southern California and visited a lot of the sites that were significant in some way to Walt's sort of early days when he was venturing out there for the first time and to the early days of the Disney studio specifically. And I just thought that was such an amazing idea. But it was something that I didn't have any like specific or concrete plans to do. It was just like a bucket list, like, well, someday I'll do that. A singer who I really enjoy was giving an interview and she said something about the wood and the walls of the Greek Theater, where she was going to be performing out in LA, contained the memories of all the music made there. And something about the way she phrased that, the wood in the walls, connected with this podcast I had just listened to recently, where they were talking about, you know, the sort of the memories that were embedded in these old structures were, that had been so important to Walt. And I was just like, I'm going to go to that concert. And while I'm out there, I'm going to see all of these things that were important to Walt Disney. And so I did that. And it's amazing how many of them are still standing and how close they are all to each other. And it was just incredibly edifying, and it made that story that so many of us know about, you know, how Disney came to be, it made it feel very like tangible.
That's great. Wow. You know, was it, you know, how, because you go out to, and let me just rephrase, we just recently did a trip to Disneyland about a month ago.
That's right.
And we went to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, and we're walking on the Hollywood Walk of Fame, and all of a sudden we look down and there's, it was Mickey Mouse or Walt Disney's?
It was Walt Disney.
Yeah, Walt Disney's, yeah. Star. And I'm looking around me like, this is Walt Disney's, you know, star on the Walk of Fame. And I had to like make sure that I had my wallet because it was pretty sketchy around that area. And the areas that Walt, you know, talks about in his books and the things that you went to go see, are they, what's the atmosphere like around those particular things?
Oh gosh. Well, it really, I guess it depends on which ones you're talking about, because it is true, and particularly Hollywood Boulevard, like you're talking about. I love it out there, but it is super sketchy. And the later it gets, I went once after everything had closed, and I did not feel safe. I was like basically holding onto my pockets, like you said. but there's, I mean, just on that little strip alone, there are so many cool things that are relevant to Disney fans, like Walt Disney Star, and, you know, like Kermit has a star, and yeah. Disneyland has a star, and a lot of like Disney legends and are there. And of course there's the El Capitan Theater and just a whole bunch of stuff. And that area can be a little sketchy, but a lot of it's in Griffith Park, which I had never been to before. Griffith Park is sort of like Central Park, but with a lot more hills, and it's more of a woodsy place, but just beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. And you can walk and hike through part of it, and there are other parts where you'll need to hop on a bus or have some sort of transportation to get around to the other parts of it. But that's where the carousel is, the Griffith Park carousel, which is, it was actually, you know, as a lot of fans know, you know, Walt was sitting on the bench there, and that's the moment when he had the idea for Disneyland. And, you know, that carousel's there, and it's spinning. I rode it. Like, you can go and ride it, and the benches are there, not the original bench that Walt actually sat on, but benches that are in the same place. And so like I sat in that spot and just had like a little moment, and that's really what that kind of trip is. You know, none of it's particularly grand, you know, nothing there is a castle, right. But it's lots of little moments of just connecting with history. And these are all buildings that you'll look around and everyone is walking by oblivious as to why, you know, anyone would care about these old things, but when you know the meaning of it, then you really do have that, like, that connection.
Wow.
I would love to see the carousel, incredible. Because that's like the, like you said, the moment in time when Walt Disney had the idea for what we all love and talk about now on a daily basis, happened at that particular place, which is amazing to me.
Yeah. And you get it. Like it when you're there, there is a specialness to the place, and you understand how Walt would have felt like, wow, I want something like this. And of course, I don't know that most people would have gone on to dream up something as incredible as Disneyland, but I mean, even just walking up to the thing from so far away, you actually hear the Calliope music playing that you kind of have to go like over a hill, at least the way I went. So you hear it before you see anything. And like from that moment, it's already very tantalizing. And then you get up there, and again, it's simple. It's no frills, but just the antiquity of it, and just the simple like pleasures that everyone's getting out of just riding this little merry-go-round is very charming.
Wow, that does sound really incredible. I was just daydreaming, thinking about it.
Did you get any million-dollar ideas when you were there?
No, not
ideas.
I was too busy thinking about churros.
Yeah. Because
they sell them there, but they're not as good.
They're not as good. Okay.
As the ones in the park.
I know you're dying about the moving the Orlando Harpers. Just go with it. Jeez. He talks about this all the time.
Yeah, because we live in Boston, and it's very, very cold here. And I'm not a huge fan of the cold, so I've always wondered about moving down south. And I listened to your podcast, and I was like, wow, he really did it. So is it – but, you know, doing the podcast and loving Disney World, you're always afraid that it'll change a little bit for you. Maybe the whole – and we always talk about this on our show, is the anticipation for your vacation is almost part of the vacation, the countdown, the getting ready to go. Does that change when you live there?
Yeah, I mean, all of that does change. I think to be entirely honest, it is – a trade-off. Now, I always say, and the conclusion I ultimately come to in this episode you're talking about is that it's totally worth it. You know, it's not that the experience as a local Disney fan is better or worse than the experience as someone who only gets to go like once a year or whatever. It's just different. But overall, you're ultimately spending a lot more time with something you love. But I think what was surprising to me is the ways in which it's different, just things that I couldn't possibly have anticipated. And I just kind of like count down through some of those in that episode. But it's just little things like going out to the grocery store and like the person who's pushing a cart beside you is, you know, dressed up like in a storybook circus costume. it's everything. Disney touches everything in the greater Orlando area. And so much of what's there is there because of Disney in some way. And so many of the people are there because of Disney in some way. And so even though none of us actually live in Walt Disney World, it kind of feels like we do. I can't tell you that I ever lose sleep thinking about going to Disney the next day. You remember that commercial a long time ago, like the kids can't wait because they're so excited because they're going to Disney World the next day. And like that leaves.
Yeah.
You know, you just can't have it within 10 minutes reach and still feel that like palpable excitement. So that leaves. But the trade-off is like I can go pretty much any time and I get to keep up with all of the little changes. I always say to my friends, like, we get excited when a trash can changes location so often that like we notice all those little things. And as much as I would like to think that I sort of knew about the parks before I moved there, I did not know them as intimately as you get to know them when it's so close to you.
Where did you grow up before you moved to Orlando?
North Carolina.
Okay.
And I'm actually, we're recording this Thanksgiving week. So I'm actually back in North Carolina right now visiting family.
Oh, nice.
So, you know, it was like a 10-hour drive from Walt Disney World. And while I was in college and law school, I had an annual pass. I was lucky to have some friends who were really into the Disney parks too. So I can't tell you how many times we, on a whim, would say like, you know what, classes are over early on Friday. Like, let's just jump in the car and drive down there. And we would just go for like a day in the parks and then drive back up for class on Monday.
Wow.
So that was cool.
So you're saying you're thinking about moving to Orlando, you should do it.
Yeah, that's pretty much what he's saying, Bruce.
Okay.
Well, yeah.
I get
it. You know, if you're looking for an excuse, I will be happy to be the person to give you that excuse.
Okay, I get it. I get it.
He gets it right, yeah. Loud and clear.
All right, Aaron, thank you. Well, I appreciate it. You know, I know you're a busy guy. Thank you so much for coming on with us today. Where can people find your podcast or your website? Give it out to everybody so they can go check you out.
Yeah, so the podcast is Zippity Doo Pod. You can find that on iTunes or pretty much wherever you look for podcasts. The books are The Thinking Fan's Guide to Walt Disney World, Magic Kingdom, and coming soon, Epcot, as well as Hocus Pocus in Focus. You can get those on Amazon, in most bookstores. You can find me on Twitter at Aaron Wallace, and my site, which has all of those things and everything else I do, because it's a lot to keep up with, I guess. So just if you forget everything else, just go to AaronWallaceOnline.com and you can get to everything else from there.
And that's a Wallace, Wallace. Yeah.
Yes.
If you're hard of spelling like me. Yes.
And AARON, my experiences at Starbucks, if they've taught me nothing else, it's that there are a lot of different ways to spell Aaron.
That's true.
Okay. Well, thank you very much again. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you guys. This was fun, and I really enjoy your show, and I'm really glad that we got to do this.
Thanks, Aaron. Appreciate it.
When we move down to Orlando, we'll definitely have to connect.
Yes.
When? She notice how she said when we move down to Orlando because you convinced her.
Yeah, there's no choice. I can already tell. His bags are packed.
Awesome.
You know what, too? We do a live show on Monday nights. We should have you on live with us one time.
Yeah, I would love that. Let's do it.
All right. We'll hook it up in the next few months.
Cool.
Perfect. All right. Thanks again.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
Bye. That was so much fun.
That was fun.
You said you really liked him.
I do like him.
I felt like that was the compliment of the year.
Well, it is the end of the year, so may just be the compliment of the year for me.
It is so funny.
Many
but you
people know
what?
I don't give too many out, so.
That's what I'm saying. So I was impressed, you know. But I think overall, it's just what an incredible person, what great perspective on Disney life, you know, having him talk about his book, The Thinking Fan's Guide, he's coming out with his new one with Epcot, just really starts to, exactly like in the title, really gets you thinking, and it's pretty neat.
He got me thinking of moving to Orlando, that's for sure.
I knew.
I knew you were over writing notes. I could see you sort of getting really excited about that question.
I'm going to text him right now and tell him to email you saying, Connie, you got to move to Orlando.
Hey, listen.
I'm listening.
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay. Hey, guys, so join us. Thank you so much to Aaron. You can find him at AaronWallaceOnline.com. That's his website. From there, you can find his podcast, his books, his blog, everything over there that has to do with Aaron. Great stuff over there, too. Also, join us on Monday nights on Facebook at facebook.com/unlockingthemagic, 8 p.m. Eastern time. We go live every Monday, really every single Monday.
Every Monday.
8 o'clock.
No longer Friday.
Yeah, no longer Friday or Thursday or Wednesday. It's all on Monday. So come join us. Say hello. Even if you can only hop on for 5 or 10 minutes, come by, stop by, say hello. You can do it right from your mobile phone. Super easy to do nowadays. Say hello. Join the community. We always play a fun game of either Would You Rather or we do some Disney trivia. We have a great moderator on. Some great people
occasionally.
Who join us. Yeah, occasionally when she can stay up past her bedtime. also on
fun.
Twitter, we are Unlock the Magic on Twitter. And our email address is info@unlockingthemagic.com if you have any questions or anything like that. And I think this is going to be a great episode. If you're going to Walt Disney World and you need some help with your booking, you should definitely check out Enchanted Escapes at enchanted-escapes.com. They can do everything for you. Book your trip, your fast passes, your dinner reservations. They take care of it all for you, and it doesn't cost you any money. Did you know that,
Yeah,
Joy?
I know that now, Bruce.
So go check out enchanted-escapes.com to book your next Disney World vacation.
They join us on live. Usually we have one of the travel agents from there, April. She usually tries to join us live on Mondays on Facebook, as well as Kat Martinez, who we had on the show recently. So be sure to come visit us and say hello really quickly. If you can't do the whole half hour, just a quick hello would make my night.
I wish I could just come by and just say a quick hello.
We should wrap it up now.
Okay, let's wrap it up. We'll see you guys next week.
Okay, thanks so much, everybody.